first paragraph of the whole resolution begins, whereas.
Yeah.
And it finishes, whereas Article 3, Section 1B of the Pacifica Foundation bylaws state in part that staff members shall be, one, any non-management, full-time or part-time paid employee of a foundation radio station, or two, any member of a foundation radio station unpaid staff organization or unpaid staff collective bargaining unit, which has been recognized by station management, or if the station has neither such organization or bargaining unit, then any volunteer or unpaid staff member of a foundation radio station who has worked for said radio station at least 30 hours in the preceding 3 months, exclusive of fundraising, marathon, telephone room, volunteer time, dot, dot, dot.
Okay, that's where it...
That's the first paragraph.
Okay, first paragraph. Okay.
And what this committee has been dealing with are ambiguities in that paragraph. Particularly with respect to unpaid staff. Because, you'll note, it says, it provides three different possible definitions of unpaid staff. The membership of an unpaid staff organization, the membership of an unpaid staff collective bargaining unit, or if neither of those have been recognized, then those who have worked a certain number of hours over a certain number of period of time.
All right.
Now, there's a particular ambiguity with respect to unpaid staff organization or unpaid staff collective bargaining unit.
Okay, you got the word and. Do you want to say or in that?
Or is in there.
No,
or
it's
is
got
in
when
the
an unpaid staff organization and an unpaid staff. Do you mean or an unpaid staff collective bargaining unit?
Can I jump in here?
Serene, yes?
Those terms actually refer to specific organizations, as in the case of WBAI and KPFA. So it's actually not confusing at all. You're either in one of the recognized bargaining units, and these bodies both existed prior to the bylaws, or you for folks at the other three stations who are unpaid, you meet the definition by a certain number of hours over a certain period of time.
Well, point.
I don't see what's so confusing.
Point of clarification here. They're not so specific. I was talking to Bonnie Simmons today, and she made the point that their organization is definitely not a bargaining unit. There are a lot of other things.
Point of order.
Yes.
There is no such thing as a point of clarification, and I wish people would quit using it unless you can find a citation for it in Robert's Rules. It's the way to interrupt discussion. You should get on the stack when you want to make a clarification, if in fact your clarification is correct. That is my point of order.
Thank you, Ted.
The point of order is well taken. I'd like to continue reading the resolution and just pause between each paragraph to see if there is understanding of what it says.
Mm-hmm. Well, in that case, I'd ask you to go back to the first one because I have a question about the first.
The first paragraph simply quotes the bylaws.
No, your first insertion, I said, not the first paragraph. But where you inserted the words under the foundation's parliamentary authority?
That's paragraph
right. We'll get to that in the third paragraph. If everyone understands the first paragraph, I'd like to read the second paragraph. And then I'll read the third.
Why can't we clarify each of these as we go?
Yes, we are. We haven't gotten to that one yet, though.
I wanted the text to be correct.
What was that?
I wanted everyone to have the same text. The third paragraph has not been presented yet. It's about to.
I'm asking whether you can present one and we address it and then move to the other. I mean, we don't necessarily have to vote on each of them separately at this point, but explain what you mean as we go.
That's what he's going to do. He's going to do two next and then go to three. So, you'll get to ask your questions, which I have similar ones on.
Yeah.
So if we have...
So if everyone
understands...
So
we're not doing them as we go, then, in other words.
No, we are. It's just that he had to make a correction on the printed one before we got started. That's what he was doing.
Yeah. This is dilatory. Let me just
proceed. Okay, I still have my...
We will get to the point that that Serene is going to question paragraph.
Well,
the third paragraph comes after the second one.
I just have a problem about the language. That's all I have. I'm not talking about the concepts or what kind of organizations they are. It's when I read, and it was confusing to me when I read, this language is ambiguous, which definitions would lie when an unpaid staff organization and an unpaid staff collective bargaining unit are concurrently recognized. We could have, that was confusing. What if a third station wants to have an organization? The problem doesn't arise because they're both, I don't know, I had...
Mary, you're at a different...
The language is confusing,
are.
And that's all I'm saying.
Mary, you are at a different paragraph than we are. We're still on the very first paragraph, which simply quotes the bylaws. I think you skipped down to the first paragraph.
Oh, I thought Terry just read this.
I was about to.
No, he read the first word.
Oh.
Okay, so the first paragraph simply quotes the section of the bylaws that defines staff members.
Right.
The second paragraph is as Mary just read, and whereas... This language is ambiguous as to which definition for the unpaid portion of staff shall apply when an unpaid staff organization and an unpaid staff collective bargaining unit are concurrently recognized at a Foundation radio station.
That's what I'm not understanding. The bylaws say when there's an unpaid staff organization or unpaid staff, they say the word or.
Right.
So I don't understand. There's no station that has both of these concurrently. So which definition shall apply when an unpaid?
We need
to me. That's I don't understand the language of that. The bylaws spell it out, and you have and instead of or, and then say it's ambiguous. And I'm not following your thought. I'm sure you had a thought, but I'm not getting it.
Yes, I had a similar confusion. Because I did not understand what a bargaining unit was. I thought that a bargaining unit was the unit that did the bargaining.
There's my place to jump in, because I've been a part of one.
So, do you want to explain what a bargaining unit is?
Yes. Generally, speaking as a former member of the Teamsters, what we basically was... we got together, everybody, although I've never, ever heard of anybody unpaid have belonging, because basically you collectively support a unit. Everybody pays a certain percentage of your pay. I think I paid 1% of my salary. That's how you keep the union hall going. Essentially what happens is anytime there is a question, as the job steward, if a person was written up because they were late, I would have to go into a meeting along with that person and their manager, because that way I could be sure that that person was correctly informed, that everything was properly documented, and I had to maintain copies for the union hall. I also had to account for them to the overall steward. Anytime any grievance was filed, I had to sit in on it, and I sat in on quite a few grievances and various questions. That's one reason why at the whole thing I've questioned this all along. Because to be frank with you, I have never heard of a full-scale union doing this, and I don't understand them doing it for voluntary thing, because the whole thing is it's a matter of for pay type positions. I've never heard of any type of union. Where would they get the union dues? It certainly wouldn't be the sort of thing you would get from the stations.
Can I get on the stack, please?
I'd like to get on the stack also.
Okay, that's going to be Richard and then Mary. But first, let me
and
say,
Melinda
did not give me what I was looking for, which is a definition of a bargaining unit. A bargaining unit.
Well, that is a bargaining unit.
A bargaining unit is the collection of individuals that are represented in the bargaining agreement. So it's the people being represented rather than the people who are representing them. It's not the negotiators, it's the members. So the point here is that when an unpaid staff organization has been recognized, presumably the people that the staff organization is representing has also been recognized because they're the bargaining unit. But the bylaws say that the unpaid staff organization or the unpaid staff collective bargaining unit will identify the members, which gives the possibility of the membership of an unpaid staff organization being given the delegate voting rights rather than everyone in the bargaining unit. The entire purpose of this resolution is to guarantee staff category voting rights to everyone that's in the bargaining unit, which is everyone who is identified as unpaid staff in the current agreement between management and unpaid staff through their representative. So we have a stack.
Yeah, well, I think I'm on it after Richard.
So I think Richard is next.
Yes, I mean, the bargaining unit, that's basic union understanding. I mean, that's any group of employees at a particular employer that bargains, you know, for themselves as a group. There was, in history, Melinda, at KPFA, prior to 1995, UE, United Electrical Workers, represented both the staff, paid staff, and the unemployed staff, and then the paid staff changed the agreement, sold out the unemployed staff members, and we switched to another union. It wouldn't do that. It's a very interesting history. But so there was representation, and I don't remember exactly how it worked, but they did have a group that it was part of the same union, but they had different categories. But anyway, that's history. The reality is that we need to have the consistency. The primary thing in my mind in all of this is that we have some modicum of local autonomy with regard to certain issues, but in terms of, you know, what makes somebody eligible to be a voting member should be relatively the same at all stations. You know, it's just, otherwise we can get into another form of patronage and cronyism that we don't need with regard to voting, and we need to have a standard, you know, that makes sense. I mean, everybody in the state of California who's over 18 gets to vote. That's it. Not in L.A., you don't get to vote if you're 17, and in San Francisco if you're 19. It's all the same. And those rules, that's the kind of rules we need to have, something that's, you know, similar, straightforward, and
easy. Richard, this discussion would be appropriate in the last agenda item on uniformity of staff definition.
Okay, well, I'm just thinking in terms of both of these things, it's the overriding reason why we're trying to clarify this. Sorry.
Was Mary next?
Oh. Yeah, I think so. Yeah, well, the uniformity, I think we do need that. That's why I wanted to add it back, or at least that subject, because without that, we have two classes of members, not one. And we're only supposed to have two in all, listeners and staff. And we may have to make sure they're all the same, or we have two classes of staff members, which is going to be a legal can of worms, as I remember when we were writing the bylaws. But your question, I am really not following what you're way ahead of me somewhere. And all I see in these bylaws is that there happen to be two unpaid staff organizations in the network. One of them calls itself the unpaid staff organization. The other, at BAI, calls itself unpaid staff collective bargaining unit. They're simply whatever the station in question calls them. I don't think it matters what the definition is at this, for this purpose of this paragraph, because I mean, there are ambiguities, but not because of the definition of an unpaid, what a collective bargaining unit is. You could substitute this, except we can't make the change. You could say the unpaid staff organization at KPFA and the unpaid staff organization at BAI, and then your question would disappear. Not the other question, not the one I'm bringing up. We still would have the problem. You know, BAI had the UE also, and they had the union longer than we did, up to 1990, I think. And the NLRB supported it, and then the hijackers appealed it, and they lost it. But I'm just not clear. I don't feel I'm on the same page. I feel like I don't understand what you said you were confused about or what your question is, because I don't even have a question. I guess I'm too simple-minded to get what the question is that you have. It's just... And so I...
The
if
language?
It's the name of the organization that is the problem, then we... we're looking at those two terms in two different meanings, maybe. I, as I said, I'm just looking at them as the names they chose for their groups in the two places. And you were looking at it as if the name has some implication. I don't get what that is. I don't see how... I'm not getting
it. I can answer that.
Good.
And I'd like to get on the stack as
well. At WBAI specifically, the unpaid staff collective bargaining unit is everyone defined in the USOC WBAI agreement, whether or not they are a member of USOC.
Now say this again. Okay, wait, run that by me once more.
The bargaining unit.
Yeah.
Are all the people identified as staff in the agreement.
Right.
The membership of the USOC is different.
What? Oh, man.
And
well,
so the bylaw question is which group gets to vote in the staff category. Everyone identified as unpaid staff in the agreement, or everyone who is a member of an unpaid staff organization, assuming for this argument that USOC is a recognized unpaid staff organization.
Now, when you say USOC, you're talking about BAI. Is that right?
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
But the same thing would apply to KPFA. If
we
at
just
KPFA,
have one.
If at KPFA there are members identified as unpaid staff in the unpaid staff organization's agreement with KPFA, who are not a member of the unpaid staff organization there, the bylaws allow an interpretation that denies them the ability to vote in the staff category because they're not a member of the organization.
Well, at KPFA, the unpaid staff organization has its own bylaws, and if you're not a member of the organization, you're not an unpaid staff, and that's it, and you're not going to be able to vote, period. We have our own bylaws that define that. There's no such difference. There's no two groups. I mean, you may be there and you didn't sign up, and that's fine. Then you don't get to vote, period. You're not in the organization, and the station has an organization, so the organization's rules are they trump. And KPFA's organizational rules are you have to be a member in order to vote, in order to be considered an unpaid staff. It's just very simple. I guess that's why I'm confused, because when you say there are two groups at New York, I don't understand what that is. See, because I'm not there. That's the problem, maybe.
Yes,
maybe
they
do have two.
If you agree with the KPFA unpaid staff organization definition of staff.
It's in our bylaws.
If you don't join the staff organization, you are not staff.
That's what
Then you would oppose this resolution, because this resolution would grant staff category voting rights to everyone who is identified as unpaid staff in the agreement, whether or not they are a member of a union or an organization.
But see, there is no agreement except this. There is no agreement. We don't have any such agreement, so it wouldn't include anybody. The only agreement we have is our unpaid staff organization bylaws. There's no other way you can... There's no other agreement with anyone. Apparently New York has two different documents or something. I don't know. We don't have that.
No,
so
that's not
true. Well
I don't know what it is.
Who's next on the stack? Was that Melinda?
I'm
not
on the
understanding.
Stack. I don't know where I am. This is Serene.
Go ahead, Serene.
The bylaws are very clear about who's considered staff. If you're paid and you're non-management, management can vote if they make a contribution of $25 or more. or apply for a waiver, which would be interesting. But anyway, other people who are paid by the station are paid staff and therefore qualified to vote by virtue of their being a paid employee.
Mm-hmm.
And paid staff are eligible to vote and are considered unpaid staff at all the stations, provided they meet one of two criteria. Either they are unpaid staff and they're a member of an unpaid staff organization, regardless of what it's named, whether it's USO as in Berkeley, or whether it's USOC. I'm sorry, it's UPSO in Berkeley.
Yeah, it's unpaid
and USOC,
staff. Right.
Right. And USOC here in New York. And there is, and that this organization, this group, has been recognized by station management. And the language of recognition, which some are on this committee advocating the removal or the cancellation of, the language of recognition is very clear that you must have been recognized by station management. So no, five people out of a body of 150 can't walk in and say, we're the staff organizing committee, you know, or we represent the unpaid staff. You have to have been recognized. And these two bodies in Berkeley and New York have been recognized by management. So there's no confusion as to how many such bodies there are at any given station. Further, in New York, we have a definition for an unpaid staff person that is contained within the agreement that we have with management. And it's actually more stringent than elsewhere where there is no such agreement. In New York, you have to have been you have to have worked at least 10 hours per month or 20 hours over a two-month period over a period of 4 months to qualify. Where there is no organizing committee, where there is no bargaining unit, no organization for the unpaid staff, which is to say in D.C., in Houston, and in L.A.,
mm-hmm.
if you have worked at least 30 hours
mm-hmm.
over a three-month period, then you qualify. So to suggest that there's some confusion about who qualifies as staff, you know, I don't know where that's coming from. It's not coming from either the contract, and I haven't seen the UPSO contract, but it certainly doesn't. There's no confusion in the USOC contract, and there is no confusion in the bylaws about how people qualify. To attempt to change the definition of staff is both a violation of the contract and a violation of the bylaws. So I don't even understand why we're investing time discussing this, frankly.
No, I guess I don't understand either. Yeah, there are bylaws specify also.
Can I weigh in for a moment, please?
Go ahead, Ted.
There was one statement that I think Serene made that doesn't take into account the situation here in Houston. We have a staff member who I think in all other cities is viewed as management, but is not viewed as management here. If the other members on this call, especially Wendy, can help me. Are you there, Wendy?
She's listening, but she's on mute.
She's a woman whose name for the moment has just escaped me, but she works upstairs in the same side of the building as Dwayne's office. Does Melinda know her name? She has to do with compliance of job regulations and those kinds of legal issues. Now, whether we're
a human resources person?
That might be it. If you'll hold a minute, I'll go to the Pacifica, the KPFT website. But
Ted, we're talking about the definition of unpaid staff.
But we are also talking about we know who management is. And Serene made the statement, we know who management is, and I think in most stations there are four people who are recognized as management. And I'm suggesting that somewhere in this document there needs to be some language that says that management at some point in time before the election will provide to the National Board for their review those individuals who will be identified as management and those who will not, and those who will be defined as paid staff but not management.
Well, can I speak to this?
Actually, I'm going to... Unless Ted wants to bring forth an amendment, I don't think further discussion on management is relevant to the motion before the body.
I would like to bring a motion, if you'll just hold on for a couple of minutes while I type it up and email it to the committee or to the chair. But I think this is a long-overlooked issue that, you know, we have this assumption that we know who management is, but here in Houston, for sure, we don't.
Well, if there's a but... Okay.
Yeah, the purpose of this resolution is to identify unpaid staff.
Well, by extension, we're also identifying who management is.
But how are you identifying it?
That was what my motion, my amendment would be that I will work on in the next few minutes.
We'll
no,
put
no,
you back at
that.
The end of a stack, and there was someone else wanting to be recognized.
Well, I'm asking for a point of order. Will you entertain my amendment at the end of the stack?
Yes.
Thank you.
I'm still so boggled. I don't understand what this resolution is doing, because it's simply saying what was already said and what we already have in the bylaw. I'm not getting it. I'm missing something here. I just don't understand.
Actually, I think it's actually confusing.
It's
blurring
very confusing.
What was very clearly stated in the bylaws. I think it's attempting to contradict what was said in the bylaws.
The bylaws allow an interpretation where members of the bargaining unit are not qualified as staff for the purpose of election.
See, that's what I don't understand. That I am totally bothered.
Could you explain that?
For example, at in New York, a person identified as unpaid staff under the bargaining agreement is not a member of USOC until they have finished their probationary period. So, if the USOC is a recognized unpaid staff organization, and if the bylaws are interpreted to give members of the organization rather than all members of the bargaining unit the vote, the unpaid staff who are on probation do not vote in the staff category.
Well, Terry, you know, the fact is that the bylaws define staff members very clearly. You're either in a bargaining unit, in which case you are subject to the definition of staff contained within that agreement, or you have met the three-month qualification of having done 30 hours over 3 months. In New York, it's actually 4 months, according to the USOC agreement. So the probationary period, if you will, is that four-month period. They're not considered staff until they've done those 4 months.
That they're in
the
bargaining unit?
Are you telling me that the bylaws intended for someone to walk in the door and vote within 15 days?
No, they will have had... In New York, they would have had to put in their 20 hours over...
4 months.
4 months in order to qualify as...
10 hours a month or 20 over 2 months for a four-month period.
Right, in order to qualify as unpaid staff under the agreement.
Okay.
Right.
That puts them in the bargaining unit. That does not put them in the USOC.
That's actually not correct. Our contract very clearly states that after the probationary period, unpaid staff shall become union members, and that applies to every unpaid person.
So what about those who fill the definition of unpaid staff in the agreement?
What do they do for union dues?
We don't have union dues.
But are still on probation.
And it's not a real union.
Well,
it's not. Why? Because we don't charge people money?
No, it's not a part of any regular union.
I'm calling for order, please.
Point of order here.
Right.
Point of order. Please respect the chair at this point. That's Terry. Thank you.
Yeah, whether or not an unpaid staff organization is a union is not relevant to our decision. What we're trying to do is identify who gets to vote in the staff category. In order to have verifiable voter rolls. That's what this committee has been struggling with.
Right. Point of information. However, I don't see what's confusing. It's really very simple.
Point of information, Terry?
Yeah.
And where do people who don't want to join the unpaid staff organization fit in?
They don't.
No, it depends on the ambiguity in the bylaws.
Wait. As I said,
the bylaws say members of the unpaid staff organization or unpaid staff collective bargaining unit. Mm-hmm. They don't specify which. So if someone is a member of the bargaining unit and they don't want to join the unpaid staff organization where both exist and are recognized, we don't know.
Well,
unless the bylaws is interpreted, whether or not they vote.
Wait, point of information,
sorry,
please.
May I get on the stack?
Is it true in New York that there are these two things existing at BAI?
No, they're not. And that is precisely my
point. Let Shireen talk. I think she wants to talk to that.
Well, I just want to know. I haven't seen the agreement.
Right. Well, it's on our website. I'll send you guys the link. But I was there when they were crafting the bylaws, and I was there when they were using. We were talking about the fact that there are different definitions. The definition that was proposed initially came out, I think, out of the draft out of Berkeley. Remember, we had like five or six drafts of the bylaws at one point. And the definition that was put together, you know, using a bit of this and a bit of that, included the existing bargaining units for the staff, and that's why they're named there. And it includes those people who do not have bargaining units to protect their rights as unpaid staff. At any given station.
No, that's
so
not my
it
question.
Is not as though anybody was suggesting, nor in fact does it exist anywhere, that there is at any one given station two different organizations of unpaid staff. It's like saying, well, you know, hey, you're either part of AFTRA or you're part of SAG or you're part of 1199 or, you know, I mean, it's or.
Okay, so your station only has one kind of organization for people who aren't paid. Is that correct?
That's correct.
You have only one agreement.
So this suggestion that it's...
Well, and it's called a bargaining unit. Is that correct? Have I got that right?
Well, we are a bargaining unit.
I want to know, but
The organization is called the Unpaid Staff Organizing Committee. We call ourselves USOC.
Okay, now what is that? That is the organization of all the unpaid staff, or is it just the council?
All unpaid staff, and the definition of unpaid staff includes the requirement that you have to have contributed X number of hours over a certain period of time for at least 4 months.
You know,
and it's really clear.
So Terry's right, and is this correct, that in New York, I can be a member of the unpaid staff collective bargaining unit and also a member of the unpaid...
They're the same thing. One is the formal name. A bargaining unit is more generic and more descriptive. The Unpaid Staff Organizing Committee is the particular name, the same way you guys call yourselves UPSO. We call, and AFTRA calls itself AFTRA, and as opposed
to anybody
else.
There's no two groups. I can't belong to both.
There's only one group. There's only one group
of
organized unpaid staff. Only one organization covering unpaid staff. Bargaining unit is a generic descriptive term. It is not the name of the group.
Point of information here?
Carolyn?
It is possible for people to be in the bargaining unit who are not in the organization. That was my point. There are members in New York who don't consider themselves members of the organization, don't attend meetings, and just don't belong to it. But they are in the bargaining unit. They're unpaid staff, according
to the... Well, how do they get in the bargaining unit?
Well, they're unpaid staff. They do work.
But how do they get in there?
They meet the definition by virtue of hours, and all the rights and all the protections apply regardless of whether you ever show up for a meeting. There are people who are, you know, very active at times and inactive at other times. But if your protection isn't based on whether or not you show up for a meeting, it's based on whether or not it exists.
Okay, so now I may get it. Now I think there's fundamental difference between BAI and KPFA. In KPFA, like I said, if you're not a member of that organization, I don't care what you do and how many hours you worked or didn't work, you're not able to vote. You're not a member of the group.
That's right.
This I'd like to
in KPI, whereas BAI. Okay. Well, can I get one more point of information? At BAI, if I'm a member of the unpaid, if I'm a member of the collective bargaining unit by reason of the fact that for the last umpteen years I work 10 hours a week or a month, whatever it is, you know, for say a year, then do I vote?
You're certainly eligible to vote.
Well, am I eligible?
Whether you choose to vote is your...
No, but I mean,
yeah.
Who certifies me? What organization certifies me as eligible and says, yes, you can vote?
The Unpaid Staff Organizing Committee.
And they will certify people as eligible who are not members of the Unpaid Staff Organization?
Okay. What I'm saying, at I don't know how it works in Berkeley. And
no,
that's
I mean
why
in New York, I'm only asking.
No, I understand. I'm saying I don't know how it works in Berkeley. And one of the reasons that I had urged repeatedly in a call that we had a couple of months ago dealing with this, that there actually be conversations, discussions with the people affected, with the stewards of these two bodies, so that these questions can be answered for everyone by the people involved in the process. I know that in New York, simply by being eligible, simply by doing a certain number of hours over a certain period of time, you are a USOC member. It is part of the agreement that says once you meet the definition of unpaid staff, which includes that certain labor over a certain period of time, you are automatically part of USOC.
Okay,
now,
so there's nobody.
It may be different.
No, wait. Now, so you're saying, now let me see if I get it. In New York, if I work these number of hours for a year, I can't not be a member of the... I'm automatically a member.
After
is that
four
correct?
Months,
so there's nobody...
After 4 months, no one is without that protection.
No,
after
I'm saying, let's
effort.
Say that I work like that for a year. You know, I work every day. I have a program I've been on for 50 years. Whatever. You know, I'm there all the time. I do this work.
Right.
And therefore, I mean, is it possible that I can do this, be a member of the bargaining unit, and not belong to an unpaid staff organization? Sounds like you're telling me that's impossible because I'm automatically a
member. Those two things are synonymous at BAI.
Pardon?
They're synonymous at BAI.
It's
okay,
called
so
a closed shop.
Well, whatever. There's only one organization then in each station. You have one. You have two different terms for it, but there's only... It's not possible for me to be an unpaid staff person and have working the requisite number of hours and not be belong to the organization. I'm automatically...
And not be protected, exactly.
In case
whether or not you ever show up for a meeting, you're still protected.
Well, you don't have to show up for a meeting, but in our bylaws, we have to...
Well, no, someone was arguing earlier that there are people who don't come to meetings. I'm saying whether or not you have a pretty newsletter
or
any of that, you're protected.
Come to order, please. I'd like to make a statement, and I'd like Serene to respond. Based on the understanding that Mary's coming to, at WBAI, a member is automatically added to the unpaid staff organizing committee if they have qualified into the bargaining unit by their number of hours worked and if they have finished their probation. They are automatically added to the unpaid staff organizing committee.
They're considered a member... People are urged and reminded that the organization exists. They're reminded of when the meetings are. The meetings are publicly posted. Any staff member, paid or unpaid, by the way, can come to the meeting. You know, it's very open. People are reminded all the time. Hey, you move, update your information. You know, you change your email address.
However, after someone has been automatically added to the SOC, presumably they can withdraw from that particular organization and still remain a member of the bargaining unit.
Mm-hmm.
Additionally, in the USOC agreement...
Can we just stop and see if that's true?
Can I ask a question? Excuse me, order, please. Can we let her finish?
Additionally,
okay.
In the USOC, in the agreement between WBAI and the USOC, it doesn't prohibit the USOC from adding members who are not unpaid staff.
What?
So, someone who used to be unpaid staff, could be a member emeritus of the USOC, even if they were not currently a member of the bargaining unit.
Terry,
because
what are you talking about?
That organization and the bargaining unit are different. The bargaining unit determines membership eligibility to the SOC, but it is still a different, a potentially different organization, and the bylaws are unclear as to whether all the members of the bargaining unit vote in the staff category or only the members of the staff organization.
Well, you're making a number of assumptions that are based on nothing that I've seen or heard. I've never heard of, a former producer remaining in the bargaining unit by virtue of some special status. There's no such thing.
I didn't say bargaining unit.
I'm sorry? I've repeatedly stated that as far as the usage, bargaining unit is a generic term. The group, a bargaining unit exists also in Berkeley. Bargaining units exist. They are simply, my phone's going to go in a minute. They're simply a group of people who have organized to protect certain rights.
Point of information, there is no bargaining unit of the unpaid staff in Berkeley, according to Barney Simmons.
There's no such thing named that. But
well,
right.
You know, I have repeatedly urged this committee, and I will, in fact, make it into the form of a motion, much as I hate those that particular way of doing business. I think that the union stewards, the people who've been elected to represent...
Let's not call it a union. It's not a union. Whatever.
Melinda, with all due respect, the fact that money doesn't change hands doesn't mean that it's not a collection
right.
of people...
Excuse me, don't show disrespect for a former steward.
How is that disrespectful? You're disrespecting our union.
Order, please.
It's not a union.
Let Serene get back to
her
point.
Okay, very well.
Can you tell me on the stack, please?
The fact that we have... people who have been elected by their colleagues to represent their interests and to protect their rights and to do this in an organized fashion. Those are people whom I call stewards. I don't know what other, whoever is unhappy with that definition. I'm sorry if it somehow offends your pride.
I'm on the stack. I want to be on the stack,
too. But I have
too.
Urged this committee repeatedly to not fire off a bunch of questions, from a member that says, well, how do you do this or how do you do that, but to actually engage in a dialogue about how these bodies work, about why they exist, and how they function. And I'm back to where I was several months ago, urging that discussion take place before we go any further.
Can we put Carolyn on the stack, please, Terry?
Can we please
May I finish? I also think, Terry, that your manner of somehow saying, well, the bargaining unit is different from the organizing committee, it's not. They are one body. One is a generic term. The other is a more specific name of the unit as it exists at WBAI. If you qualify as unpaid staff, I sound repetitive, but I keep hearing the same mistake being made in terms of defining the organization. Once you meet the definition of unpaid staff by virtue of having done X number of hours over X amount of time, then you are a USOC member. You're eligible to vote, both in USOC internal elections as well as qualifying for local station board elections. You can vote and run. And that remains the case for as long as you are working at the station. When someone leaves, so there's no such thing as membership for it's not like professor emeritus or something. When you're not there, you're not there.
This is Patty.
I'm
Patty, like
Carolyn
to
on the stack. I believe
Melinda.
Mary is also on the stack. I'm not sure where.
Melinda.
Was there someone before Patty?
I think that was before Carolyn. But
I think I'm after Patty.
Yes, I was last, I think.
Okay, who's after Patty?
Melinda.
Melinda, and Mary is before Patty?
I think so.
Okay, go ahead, Mary.
Okay. I thought I was understanding it, Jerry, until you said about the marriages and people, if they leave. We have bylaws. They have an agreement. They seem to have stewards. We have an unpaid staff council, UPSOC, that we elect 5 people every year. They are the ones who determine who is eligible for membership. I mean, they qualify people, let's say, some, you know, to see if the people really did work those hours. Unfortunately, our agreement has 30 hours in 12 months, which is very unfortunate. But that's it. And if you, let's say you've done your 30 hours and it's 15 months later, you're no longer eligible. It has nothing whatever to do if you ever go to a meeting. We do have to sign up. We didn't used to, but we do now. We just re-registered everybody because we had faulty information. We couldn't get hold of people and blah, blah. But there's no way. I seem to hear that there's one organization in each of these stations and that they each have their rules, one by an agreement, one by bylaws, but there's no, I'm not getting, Terry, where you're saying that people could leave and still be part of it. If I'm hearing Serene correctly, the fact they did the work, like that's why I kept saying, supposing I work there 20 hours a month for a year, we make sure that I keep doing it, then I'm automatically a member of the unpaid staff organization. And Serene seems to be saying that everybody would have a bargaining unit, and she didn't know what ours are called, but that's not the organization. It's just the unpaid staff organization, if I'm understanding her right. So I don't get where your problem is, Terry. Unless you know something, unless you're getting something more and different out of this than I am, I'm so boggled and bewildered. I just don't understand where you are saying there are these two groups. So where's the ambiguity? I mean, I see ambiguity in other ways, like work at the station doing what? Gardening? You know, that's a whole other issue. We're not even on that subject. But as far as it goes, can you explain, Terry, where you're getting that, how anybody could no longer be there and still, and so they're not doing the hours per month and still be a member of one and not the other? I don't understand how you say that, unless maybe we just need to see the text of the agreement.
Yes.
But it doesn't seem to say that there are this possibility. So how do we look at the text of this agreement? Would that clarify it? Is that what you're going by, Terry?
Yes.
Well, then, okay, how do we go look at this agreement? Where can I find it? I'm at the BAI website, but I can't find it.
Yeah.
It's not on.
Right.
Okay. Well, Serene is going to send us the link.
But the agreement at WBAI recognizes the USOC as the bargaining agent for that bargaining unit.
Okay.
So the USOC has a responsibility to represent everyone in the bargaining unit, whether they are a member of USOC or not.
But how could they...
Point of order, please. If there's a stack, could
I'm sorry.
Juana, maybe some of Mary's
okay.
questions
okay.
will get answered
I'm
then.
Sorry. I'm just so frustrated. I'm trying to get it, and I feel so stupid.
So,
I'm just not getting it.
So I want to clarify that I'm not saying that there are staff members emeritus at New York. I'm just saying that the agreement that exists does not limit the USOC as to how they define their membership. The agreement does define the members of the bargaining unit that the USOC represents.
May I ask Serene to send that link that she said she would send so that I can go look at that agreement?
Also, I can send
you a
copy. Yeah,
I'm going to get back to the computer in a few minutes.
Patty?
Okay, well, I don't quite understand, and that's why I don't quite understand, if if USOC says it is one that decides who is allowed to vote because they represent the bargaining unit. But if people refuse to be part of USOC, and if people don't want to be part of USOC, and how does USOC maintain a proper list of people that are to be, you know, that are workers there?
Good point.
And I don't understand how if it's not mandatory membership, but you're mandatory, you are in it just by virtue of this 10 hours per month or 20 hours over a 2 month period. But there's also this probationary period of 2 months where you're not anything. Well, what happens to those guys if they put in 20 hours in that 2 months, but they're not USOC yet? And they still haven't followed the bylaws either. So I'm just a little confused. As far as protection or anything, I don't really think USOC really protects anybody from much. But that's another story. One more little comment. In the reading of the USOC agreement, too, one part of the contract says, just for FYI, says persons who work as Marathon telephone volunteers do not qualify as unpaid staff.
Right.
So one could, but one reading of this would be that someone who otherwise would qualify as a member of the unpaid staff would lose their membership if they worked as a telephone volunteer.
Oh, no.
But all of a sudden it's open to interpretation where you say, well, that's not what they mean.
It's ridiculous.
Well, it sounds ridiculous, but it also seems ridiculous to me that I'm told that this organization that people do not have to be part of is the organization that decides who is a bargaining unit member.
Good point.
Okay, can I just repeat? Because maybe, first of all, I have a point of order.
I'm
on the stack.
She asked a question, but certainly I can wait. I can get on the stack to answer. That's fine.
Okay, Serene is on the stack after Carolyn, and we had a point of order.
I thought I heard someone say that.
There are people who are on this call who are also participating in other calls, so they're sort of back and forth, and it's almost like a false quorum because they're not fully in
either call. There's no one like that here.
So I would like to know, because I know you do the Robert's Rules thing really well, Terry. Is there some guidance on that? On people who are balancing two calls?
Nobody is
doing
that.
Miss Hattie, you're out of order.
This is Wendy.
Point of order.
Oh, please.
Barry?
Who's that?
Ted.
Yes, okay. Ted.
First of all,
wait a minute, Ted.
I have a point of order.
I have to rule on a prior point of order. To the extent that the questioning of members being able to participate in two calls simultaneously is being raised as a point of order, I'm ruling that that point is not well taken. The members who have responded to the roll call are considered on the call. Is there an appeal to this ruling? Hearing no appeal, I recognize Ted for another point of order.
My point of order is, yes, I am distracted by doing two things at once, and for somebody on this call to suggest that nobody is double tasking right now is inappropriate. I would also like to raise the point of order that a last point of order should be raised before preceding points of order.
Oh, my God.
So your point of order should have been
cutting to the front line again.
Rest before my point of order.
I am ruling that last point of order as not well taken. I don't believe a point of order is an order until the point of order has been ruled upon.
It's true.
Was there another point of order from you, Ted, that requires a ruling?
But I will appeal the decision of the chair, and that is that I just asked this question of the former president of the Texas Parliamentary Association, and he said that if there are a series of points of order, the one raised the most recently is the one that is considered first. Now I withdraw my appeal to the decision of the chair.
Give us a copy of that one, Ted.
Yeah, find the site. Okay, the appeal having been withdrawn, we can proceed with the stack.
Okay, yes. I'd like to question something here. Well, first of all, I'd like to make a point, and that is it's real interesting that my what I'm hearing here, and correct me if I'm wrong, it sounds like that you're saying, well, we don't need to have anybody keeping records because we already have this group in place, when, of course, the reason this came around to begin with was because in two elections we had a lot of questions that were raised about a lack of records. And so obviously there's a synapse in all five stations involved. Also, there's a matter of record keeping in other matters, because if you're going to get into matters of collective bargaining, there will also be a matter of grievances and any type of arguments or codes of conduct or anything where there would be records. What I want to know is, does this group, if these people truly are stewards, do they maintain the paperwork, or do they give that to the union, or and would the union really keep the records of a group that's made up of volunteers?
Well, they used to.
But my main question is, it is broken, so we need to fix it. It's not a matter of everything working hunky dory right now.
Thank you. Carolyn?
Yes, I'm going to make 3 points. One is that we're really running short on time, so if everyone could confine themselves to one comment, perhaps, or 2 minutes max, I think we could move along a bit better. Second point is that Terry's point is proven, I think, by the fact that at the last election in New York, and I know other places too, there were other, I mean, at Berkeley as well, there were people who were supposedly in the unpaid staff organizing group who did not receive ballots. In other words, they were in the bargaining unit, they should have gotten ballots, but they did not get them, and which I think is proof that, in fact, they're de facto, even though people would like to call them by the same name, there are two organizations or two units in existence, and one of them calls itself official, and the other is everyone else. But actually, everyone else is there. And my third point is that Serene made a point earlier about contacting stewards and so on. I have been working very hard to get information from other people, and I found that people at KPFA were really willing to talk and discuss their situation and the problems with this issue. And I have had absolutely no response from the stewards at WBAI. I wrote a letter, I wrote August, September, and I've had not only no response, but I've had rudeness in that I understand my letter was addressed at a meeting, and I was never notified of it. So there's information, but evidently no one at WBAI wishes to discuss this with the elections committee as a group. So I welcome some move to do this, and I think that was in the motion that was removed from the agenda, which would require the management of these two stations to sit down with the organized committees and do something about regularizing the situation. But back to the original point, I think that there are, in fact, de facto two organizations here, and I would like Terry to read on the resolutions here and look at this motion as a whole, because I think it's really important that we settle this.
Point of order.
Yeah. Point of order.
If I move on, I'm not going to be able to vote on this whatsoever. I can move on. I don't understand about the two organizations. Carolyn says there's the fact that staff didn't get ballots shows there's two organizations. A whole lot of listeners here didn't get ballots either. So what? I mean,
Mary,
two ballots screwed up.
I'm sorry, you're out
if
of
we
order.
Move on, how will we ever be able to vote? I, for one, cannot, because I don't get it. I just don't see what this resolution is.
I understand, Mary, but that's not proper to interrupt the stack with that observation. You're out of order.
Okay.
I'm still